Hey, it's Jeff and Jeremy from the Ultra Running Guys. And if you're here, you probably already know that we started this podcast to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey.
But what you may not know is that in addition to this podcast, we also host two live races in the Wilmington, North Carolina area that are designed to do the same.
Yep, the first is the Hydra, which takes place on April 20th and has a 50K individual, a 50K relay, and a half marathon option. Whatever option you choose, we promise that slaying the Hydra will be unlike any race that you've ever experienced.
And the second is the Final Countdown, which takes place on September 14th. And whether you've never run before or you're a hardcore ultra veteran, this race is designed to help you find your limits. And we will be there with you to help celebrate.
All right, so mark your calendars, share with your friends, and visit us at our website, theultrarunningguys.com, or check out the links in the show notes for more info.
And with that, enjoy the episode, and remember, when in doubt, just show up. And welcome back to the Ultra Running Guys. You got Jeremy Reynolds and Jeff Winchester of the Ultra Running Guys. And the reason that we're here is to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey. And part of taking that next step is figuring out exactly what it's going to look like. So a little while back, we started these episodes where we're doing race spotlights, talking with race directors about the incredible events they're putting on. And I'm excited about this one because this is the first one we've had. It's up in the Northeast. Not only that, but it's a doozy of a race. So Jeff, why don't you tell us what we're getting into?
It also has a really, really cool name. Like, so not many races call themselves Jigger. So it is the Jigger Johnson 100 that we're talking to the race directors about today. According to their website, the JJ 100 or the Jigger Johnson 100 is one of the world's most grueling trail races. Located in the White Mountains National Park in New Hampshire, the race is 100 miles, give or take 12, apparently.
Give 12,
right? And it's an out and back. It does have an actual mileage of about 112 miles. It's got 32,000 feet of elevation gain over the course of that. Some key information though for you. The max elevation, according to the website, is only 4,300 feet. So it's not like you're talking about some serious altitude that you're working through and stuff. It's not like you're climbing Mount Everest or anything like that. But the race though has a cutoff of 54 hours. And we're going to talk about that a little bit too as we get into it, because that's a really long cutoff for a race. And so I'm looking forward to it though, because I'm going to get to introduce you all to one of my friends. When I call him a friend, is Rem Stone, who's one of the race directors. It's someone that I knew that we both were coached from, I guess, when I first started getting coaching. And then also his co-race director, Christina Bolsick.
You got it. Nice.
I did. So Rem and Christina, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Look, we're stoked about this. And so I'll be honest, one of our guests, Aaron Dana, was on, and he's kind of known for the Murder Mile and doing, you know, some of those grueling races. And what he said was, yeah, I've got this, one of the races in my sights is the Jigger Johnson, and I'm terrified to do a race like that. So that's when I was like, oh, okay. So I'm looking forward to this conversation. I think there'll be a lot to talk about. The whole, you know, the point of this is really to give the listeners an idea of what to expect. But before we get into the logistics and that kind of stuff, one of the things we like to ask first is, as the race directors, what is your favorite thing about the Jigger Johnson?
I think for me, it's the camaraderie that we see. Like all the runners, I've never seen a race where the runners literally work together to try to finish. Mm.
That's a good answer. And so I will say we were looking at some statistics, and last year, I believe, was the first year for the 100. Mm-hmm. And it was I'll just say in general, it was a fairly low finishing rate, something
14 out of 47.
Yeah, 14 out of 47. So that makes sense that people are out there working together, because with a 54 hour cutoff, it's going to be kind of grueling. However, we talked before the show, it's recently come under the Aravaipa umbrella. Obviously, Aravaipa is known for community, so it's good to hear that's a big part of this race. Why don't you give us a quick rundown? Like, how did the Jigger Johnson come about? And then tell us quick how Aravaipa came into the picture.
So we wanted to bring a 100-mile race to the White Mountains, and the first year we did it, we weren't allowed to do 100. So the 50-ish mile was kind of a test run, and it went well. So the Forest Service gave us permission, and Rem ripped out a bunch of maps, because there are a lot of hurdles with hosting these races in the mountains, and put together a course that they approved, and there we were with the 100-mile race.
So when you say hurdles, what kind of hurdles do you have to kind of jump through to kind of get something like that approved?
A lot, but some of it just comes down to how much wilderness we have. And there's not a lot of good connections because you're not allowed to go through wilderness. So you have to work around it. And the Appalachian Trail also runs through pretty much the center of the White Mountain National Forest. And you're not allowed to go on that either. So we're really restricted in terms of what trails we can actually use and bring people on.
So it sounds like a lot of work went into it. It seems like the reviews have been good. So let me ask this. White Mountains, I haven't been there personally. Again, I heard Aaron talk about it. From what I know, it's technical, it's rooty, there's some different things. So who should target the Jigger Johnson, and what do you think sets it apart as a race?
We actually get a lot of people who have never raced before, but do a lot of hiking. Mm-hmm. So the course is, it's not a fast course by any means because it's super technical. There was so much rain this year that there was a waterfall coming down one of the climbs, I think knee deep water for 3 miles through Hancock Notch. And it's just a really difficult course. So somebody that has mountain experience understands a lot of the dangers and risks and is okay with being out there in super remote areas, sometimes by themselves.
Yeah. So someone who's looking to break past a new barrier in like the ultra running world, I think is a good person for that. And someone who's very content with being out potentially by yourself for 7 hours in
between, or a day
in between like an aid station though. Like,
yeah. You
know, it's not an aid station every hour. It's an aid station probably every 6 hours or so.
So would you describe this? You said that there was a lot of people that were experiencing maybe their first ultras and everything. Would you say this is a beginner friendly course though?
No.
Right.
They have to love it. So the thing is the vision for this race, which is really cool, is prior to this race, a 50 mile or 100 mile route in the White Mountains was really limiting to people because you had to have a bunch of friends. It was kind of limited to elite athletes who had a lot of connections and the ability to do it. So by providing a fully supported course, now people have an opportunity to come out and try to do something big without having to find people to wait at, you know, set up aid stations for them and crew them and pace them. Now they can go out and have a fully supported experience. And these hikers who are already pushing the limits and doing PEMI loops and trying to do longer days can now go out and do a 50 mile or 100 mile, a really hard route.
I love that idea. And so we've had several guests that really came from through hiking starts, right? And so I would say if you're listening to this, and a lot of times we hear about people running 100 miles incredibly fast and stuff, it sounds like that's not really what your target is, right? If you enjoy being out there, if you enjoy the time on your feet, especially if the idea of through hiking or that type of atmosphere appeals to you, then I would think that this is a race to really look into. Now, we were talking about, we mentioned 54-hour mm-hmm. cutoff. Is that why, and for reference, if you're listening, like we looked up some others, right? So Badwater 135, 48 hours. Ouray, which I think has 41,000 feet, is 48 hours?
52
hours, sorry. So that one's close. But bottom line is yours is kind of the longest that we found. Is that why? Is because you're looking for, to give people that opportunity to kind of just move at a hiking pace?
I think the winning time was what, 30 or 31 hours this year?
Maybe 34 or so.
34, but yeah.
No, it's just because the terrain's really slow. That's the real reason why, is if we did any less, we're not sure we would have people give people the opportunity to actually finish it. You know, 2 miles an hour in the White Mountains is
quick.
It's a pretty quick time, you know, and especially after you're moving 100 something miles with that much elevation, people are tired. You'll see them at the end of the race, they're walking very, very slow, like most likely less than a mile an hour at most parts. So
that is mind boggling. If you let that just sit for a second, like 30 minutes per mile is fast.
Yeah, it's interesting because we've talked to kind of the different formats that appeal to people. So it sounds like this is going to be, so if you're listening, right, you're probably thinking, nope, not interested, not my thing, right? Or you're like, oh, I really like the sound of this challenge. And I will appeal to the women listening because we looked, from what we saw, there's been two finishers and both of them were over the 52 hour mark. So it looks like there's some pretty good opportunity to get out there and do your thing and snag a course record, you know, potentially.
Just don't die.
Doesn't sound like it'll come easy. Right.
But, and there's really no time for sleeping. So, I mean, you're watching the sun come up, go down, come up, go down, come up. It's a lot of sunrises and sunsets.
So fascinating.
I can't absorb that.
Yeah. So obviously this is a race that kind of stands on. Now let me ask this specifically though. Okay. Somebody's listening. What can runners do to prepare to avoid a DNF? What should they be aware of? Like, what do you, somebody's like, hey, I'm thinking about running your race. Talk to that person and be like, here's what I want you to know.
Wet feet, boulders, slippery.
Vert. I mean, vert, at the end of the day, just slow, easy vert.
Up, time on down. Feet,
nonstop. That's I would say the best training recommendation you could have. It's not like a true runner's race. You know, the terrain, of course, you can run bits and pieces of it. You know, there's some flatter sections during the course, but none of the hills you're going to be running up. It's just the terrain in the White Mountains is really just too technical and steep to truly, I would say, run up. You know, a lot of people will power hike. Some of the faster people, you're talking like 17, 18 minute mile power hiking uphill. And so I think that's just part of the challenge.
Yeah. And if you have the opportunity to get up there, do sections, do them in both directions, get comfortable with what it feels like and get to know the trail. If not, then just do the steepest, rockiest, gnarliest thing you can find up and down.
So aside from looking for something very difficult, talk to us about the course itself. Like, are there views? Is there beauty? Is it kind of, is in a lot of trees? Like, what can people expect to experience?
Oh man, there's views on Tecumseh, the Osceolas, a little bit on Tremont.
Yeah.
And then the moats, that whole ridge for the moats is just absolutely spectacular.
Yeah, you'll go through, like, throughout the course, you'll go through a lot of different views, whether it's you're in the middle of the forest and there's literally nothing around you except for a trail, and it's very remote feeling. I think there's probably the furthest away section is probably, I don't know, maybe 4 miles away from a road at any given time. So there, and that's, you know, say you're in the middle of a section, 4 miles in each direction might be the longest to like a bailout point, essentially. But yeah, then there's just good, gorgeous views of the Mount Washington Valley, Waterville Valley.
Hancock Notch is kind of cool. You can see the damage from Hurricane Irene where the river just gutted out the whole side of a cliff. And, you know, you're trying to like figure out, where do I go? And that trail was actually knee deep water for 3 miles this year. That was nuts.
So during the race itself, they were in knee deep water for 3 miles.
Yeah. We also had like a record rain year this year. So not always the case. I think it was just the past year might have been a little bit worse.
We should have had rafts.
You know what I like about race directors that do, they direct ultras, is they don't give a rip. Like, it's a feature. Like, right, when something like this happens because of weather, we just call that a feature. And so I respect the junk out of that. It's different than like some of the road races and stuff that you see out there where they're just gonna be like, oh, we got to cancel or what have you. We're like, oh, you got knee deep for 3 miles. That is the trail. You're doing good. Like, that's the way.
Yeah. It sounds too like it's a good opportunity, because you mentioned earlier that it provides a unique opportunity probably to get to see some of these places because of the support you guys have provided. So to me, if you're listening, that's the thing. It's like, okay, hey, I want to get out in an area I probably normally couldn't get out in. I want to see things that most people probably aren't going to see, and I'm willing to work pretty darn hard for it, you know, and I enjoy that kind of type 2 fun. Then I would think that's who's signing up. And you guys already have a pretty good registration list, like we were looking. So it's attracting the people. So it's not too, too crazy, right?
I didn't see your name on it.
My name is not on it at the moment.
I mean, the food is amazing too. We have a pasta bar, a mashed potato bar. We do have gluten-free vegan options, carnivore options, or some of the other ones. We have like these are cool like wraps. So there's a lot of good food along the way.
So let's talk about that. So you have aid stations with that type of buffet, if you will, that you've got available for runners. How do you get that food to those remote type locations? Because I'm imagining that these aid stations have to be located in remote places along the course.
They're not the thing. Can't have, so they're easy access. The problem is we can't have crew and people hanging around because the Forest Service doesn't allow the parking lots to get filled up. So that's one of the big challenges. We have one crew area and then we can only have pacers from the turnaround. So that creates another challenge for people too, is they really don't get to see their crew.
So that's really good information, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's going to be people that like to support themselves. There's going to be people that love to have their family in an event, that type of thing. So let's make sure that that's understanding. So you mentioned aid stations 4 to 6 hours apart, you know, and I'm guessing that's obviously just based off of the kind of the slow going.
It's only 8 miles.
Right.
No, it is. I mean, they're math.
A couple miles an hour. But you just mentioned, so now does every aid station have that? Are some of them minimal? Like what should somebody know about how to support themselves and what to expect from what you guys are going to provide?
We provide quite a bit.
So at every aid station?
I would say everything except for really the, and by no means is it a unstocked aid station. I would say the first aid station for the 100-mile race has probably the least stuff at it, just because you're only a handful of hours into the course. It's early. A lot of people aren't going to be eating, you know, burgers or anything like that. But once we get into, you know, 8 hours of the race, it's fully stocked. Mm-hmm. Everything from your chips and candy to true meals, because you need real food during this type of event.
So that's good to know. So mm-hmm. it sounds like a lot of sustenance, but I would imagine too, just listening to that, or, you know, for everybody listening. So it's also not the kind where you just carry a handheld between aid stations, right?
So there's a mandatory gear list that people, it's a substantial mandatory gear list. And depending on the weather, we sometimes have to add to it.
And that's actually a thing that we had is gear. So I don't want to spend too much time there, but what are the types of items like, you know, that are on that list? Is there anything that comes to mind? Like, yes, people have to have X, Y, Z. Or just go look at the list. Is it posted on the website?
It is posted on the website, but you know, let's say it's like perfect weather, you know, you still need something like a shell of some sorts, you know, water filters. We do require, what is it? I think at least 2 liters.
2 liters. Yeah. Carrying 2 liters of water at all times, first aid kit. It's an unmarked course, so you have to have some sort of device like Gaia or your watch, plus backup batteries to charge things in case they die on you.
It's going to take some preparation. This is not a sign up on Friday and head out type of.
pretty much all the gear that will require you to have is good enough to make you have a terrible night in the woods, but it'll keep you alive. Yeah. And that's the goal, right? Is if something happens, if a runner gets injured, we need to make sure that they have enough gear on them that they can stay alive for us to get to them.
Because it can take a few hours for us to get to them. And also like to take the burden off the Forest Service, but they send rangers out that'll sometimes dig in people's packs and make sure they have the gear. So it's part of permit requirements as well.
So take it seriously.
So do you have a means of tracking runners? Do they have some sort of tracking device on them?
No.
Hopefully in the future, but.
The problem is the trees are so dense that tracking, even the in reaches, it can take 20 minutes to get a ping out, 20 minutes to get one back. So it can take 40 minutes to find a location.
So anybody who's participating truly needs to be comfortable in being in a very remote section. To be out there. That makes sense, just from a safety standpoint too.
And like you said, spending some time in that section, if you know the word needs to get out to get some help. Are you tracking then at each aid station? Are they doing check-ins?
We are, yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. And so one other thing I want to tie up. Oh, go ahead.
I'm just laughing because they would be looking for me after the, so I'm trying to get into the first aid station. They're like, he was at the start, but he hasn't made it to aid station one.
Right.
and all we got here is some chips and pasta or whatever, but he's gonna be somewhere lost.
Somebody heard crying on the off the trail.
Oh no, that was at the start. They heard that at the start before I got going. So funny.
We do give you a nice little sticker if you DNF though. You get a nice bumper sticker.
I mean,
I guarantee
all you
gotta
do is show up and get your sticker.
I can guarantee you give me a sticker.
So there's not too many races where you can be like, yeah, our real goal is to like help you not die. You know, that's it's pretty. But I mean, we joke, but again, I think this is why we do this show, right? Because it's one thing to read it. It's another thing to hear you guys talk about, hey, this is the considerations you really need to have. Here's what you need to understand coming in, take it seriously. But I do want to tie up, mention the aid station. Sounds like there's quite a bit, but spend time in between. One kind of crew area, is that at the 50 miles out of the turnaround?
No, it's about what I think like 35 miles in. So on either half. So it's like mile 35 and mile like 80 or something like that, give or take a little bit.
And then as far as pacing though, yeah, I thought I heard the second half. How would you pick up a pacer?
The turnaround. And again, we can't have people congregating, so they have to get dropped off. Like everybody has to get dropped off. You know, if there's too many people in the lot, we'll lose our permits for the race.
Okay. So if I'm doing the math right, like it hit, you know, if this is me, my wife says, I want to come crew, right? I'll say, okay, I'll see you at mile 35. And then may I pick up a pacer? So, but it, if you're asking somebody to come pace for you, it sounds like it's essentially a minimum of a 15 mile stretch from where you pick them up back to the next crew. And then that would be, if you're going to change out pacers, high five there. Does that sound right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you're 30, and then you're 35 from there.
Yeah. There's a couple other spots, like anywhere on the way back, any aid station can have a pacer. Okay. It's just, they have to get dropped off there.
Okay.
They, you know, bring a car, sit, leave their car overnight type deal. It's really just get dropped off and wait for your runner to get there.
Okay. So that's good to know. There is some flexibility if you're looking for kind of pacing strategy, but yeah, part of that strategy needs to be how to get them in and out of there and not gum up the course with cars and stuff. So fantastic. Got any other questions on that stuff?
No.
Okay.
Jeff's just getting his mind turned and he's like, I'll be in a handful.
No, I mean, so I'm gonna be very, very transparent. We have joked a lot about it being very difficult, very, very challenging, very extreme. It's kind of like we talked a bit about this topic before the show started recording. You know, we do these race spotlights because there are a wide variety of races that people can participate in. And there are some that are easier hundreds, and there are some that are more difficult hundreds. 100 miles, regardless of it, is still a very challenging distance, regardless of which one you choose. And so we do joke about some of these that are in our world considered very extreme, because it's not something that we see in our everyday life because of where we live, right? But this type of race does attract folks who are used to running in the mountains and everything. And so I know we have kind of expressed fear and trepidation, but it's actually probably very attractive to those who like to run in the mountains. You know, we've had former guests like Tara Dower, Canyon Woodward. Sorry. Yeah, both of which I would think would love something like this, because this kind of like speaks to their love language. Aaron Dana, that you mentioned already. And so there are a lot of people out here that this race draws to. And so, yes, my mind was rambling or racing because I kept thinking, it may not be the race for me because it scares me so bad, but it may be the exact race that somebody's looking for. And so, so I think it's great. I mean, I like actually some of where we're going with this. I'm very curious though about qualifying requirements, because if I do consider a race like this, I feel like there should be some sort of requirements for me to get in. Maybe not for somebody who lives in that area, but are there qualifying requirements for this type of race?
There are, and you don't have to have done a race, because a lot of the people that do this race aren't racers, but you have to have done a significant route that shows you're capable of being out there for extended periods of time in the mountains. So people usually just tell us like what they did or a race they did.
Solid. Okay.
Yeah. Somebody else that came to mind was Meg Landymore,
who
went out and did the whole AT and spent a lot of time in some of these sections. So Meg, if you're listening, I expect to see your name on the list. But no, that's good. So we talked about, so as far as the registration, obviously it's open. We talked about it's a growing list. Anything that we need to know there? I'm assuming with it being kind of a young race and it being kind of a niche race in terms of the difficulty, did you guys sell out last year?
Did we?
We got pretty close.
You know, we might, I think we did.
Yeah. We also have last year we had the 50 mile and 100K and 100 mile. For this year, we have a 20 mile and 50 mile.
And the 100 mile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was the other thing. We did make a note of that. So again, if you're listening, you're like, gosh, that just sounds like a bit too much to bite off. There is a 50 mile and a 20 mile. And to me, that's like, hey, I'm interested in seeing what this is like, but I also don't want to die. You know, spending 20 miles out there probably sounds a lot more manageable to some people.
Yeah, I think I would do something like a 20 mile just because, I mean, I know I could finish it, even though it would be in a lot of pain and suffering or whatever personally, but it would be an opportunity. Huh?
I think you have like a day to finish it because, yeah, it's more than a day. You have 26 or 7 hours to finish the 20 miles. So you can go out and just walk. And,
yeah, but at 30 minutes a mile, you're talking 12 hours.
It seems like a good way, though, to kind of dip your toe in it and see if that's the type of thing that appeals, right? That bad type math. Of format.
Sorry, I just did bad math. Ignore me.
It's all of YouTube watching. So
I have two more random questions. And these, I'm just curious about, where did the name come from?
So Google Jigger Johnson, he was a drunk, belligerent logger with a huge story in the White Mountains. And out of all the crazy things he did, he ended up like, I think he died in a car accident. It was some stupid accident he died in. But if you Google him, he was nuts.
A badass logger.
Yeah.
So it's a real person.
A real person, yeah.
Because and my other question, which I'm no longer going to ask, I'm just going to tell you, is that I saw one of the awards that the winners get, I guess, is this massive saw. And I was like, what's the saw about? You know,
that makes sense.
I know. Yeah. Right.
That's awesome. So we're probably getting close to wrapping up here, but something I want to know as the race directors, I mean, you mentioned there's just a lot of work that goes into this type of thing. What does it mean to you that people sign up and come from, you know, different areas to come run your race?
This race is pretty special. It's really cool. Like the emotions at the finish line. I mean, we were up for like 60 hours and we're like crying with people. And there were so many cool things at the finish.
Yeah. I think it's just, again, going back to like what the goal was of this race is give people the ability to attempt to do 100 miles in the White Mountains. You know, a lot of people don't go to the Northeast. It's, you know, everyone in the Northeast is like, oh, the White Mountains are amazing. But on a global scale or even a national scale, they're really not popular by any means. And by bringing this race in, it's difficult. I think the goal is for us to bring more draw to the area and have people come on the journey with us, you know, and just try and stumble through 100 miles in the White Mountains. Yeah. You know, and in terms of like outside of last year when the race happened, you know, out and maybe outside of like through hikers who are doing the Appalachian Trail in, you know, multiple days through the White Mountain National Forest, there's not a whole lot of people out there who have done 100 miles in one push in the White Mountains. And so this really enables people to give that attempt, you know, and again, it's supported. So there's a little bit more love for them.
So if you're watching, you saw both of you light up,
right?
When we asked that question, if you're listening, go watch that part of the video, right? Cause that was really neat to see. It's always fun to watch passion come out. And obviously that ignited that in both of you. It's just clear that this race means a lot to you. So got anything else?
I don't.
Well,
he does. Yeah.
One more thing. When your watch hits mile 99 to mile 100, you are in the process of a, 1800 foot climb, going 1 mile. And on average, it took people about 50 minutes to do on their return trip. So that's when you get to watch the mile 100 click.
So 1800 feet in 1 mile.
Or maybe it's like 1.2 miles.
Yeah, it's still steep. It's hand over hand.
That's a crap.
That's got to be the longest mile ever.
I would just get stuck like midpoint. Huh?
We have cool buckles for everyone who finishes and cool sticker for everyone who doesn't. Everyone wins.
So it's a 100-mile race, climb the hill, and then you got a 12-mile or so cool down to go get your buckle.
Roll off the other side.
There's
another mountain you have to climb.
Sounds like a blast.
Well, I think it's awesome. It's cool to see if you're listening, you know, obviously, again, you're probably in one of two camps. You're fascinated and you're going, ooh, that sounds beautiful. It sounds hard. It sounds like my kind of fun. Or you're like, cool, I'm looking for, you know, something different. Either way, I'm sure that was informative. It's been a lot of fun to talk about. Yeah. Talking to the audience, if this is your first time coming across us, welcome. You know, we also do a interview style show. Please plug into that if you haven't, but if you're finding value either way, we'll do the ask, right? Share with your friends, do the subscribe, leave the review, all that good stuff. But Christina and Rem, this has been such a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for all the value you bring, not only to your runners, but just to this show. And we just appreciate you guys so much.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. We'll make sure we get all the links down in the show notes. And to everybody, we appreciate you so much. Our motto is just show up. So keep that in mind. And to everybody, we will talk soon.
Cut.
All right, listen, thank you so much. We recognize the fact that you are probably just hanging on just for a couple more minutes as you're finishing up your run. But really, we do want to give you a huge thank you for the constant support that you've shown us. We hear you and we feel you. And the best way for us to continue to grow is for you to share us with your friends. Tell them what you put in your ears when you're out there on a long run. Hit the like button, leave us a comment, leave a review, and give us some direct feedback on what you like about the show and also what you don't like. We're here to improve and do it for you.
And it really means the world. And listen, if you would like to support financially, you can connect with us on Patreon at patreon.com/theultrarunningguys, or you can use the support link in the show notes. Any and all support goes directly back into growing the show and helping us get better at what we love to do, which is to serve all of you. And with that, finish up that run, get cleaned up, and just show up.
Clean.
Clean.